Today on Rambling About Cars, no Land Cruiser, no problem, because the Lexus LX is here. Debuted, it's a luxury Land Cruiser. We'll get to that. We're also going to talk about...
Of course it is.
It's a little overdue. We're also, speaking of overdue, going to talk about Corvette E-Ray Hybrid, or is it the E-Ray that we've been seeing? I'm going to have some public service announcements about winter, just because, yeah, it's almost that time of year. And Bruce is probably going to have some on that as well. And then we have a new segment we're going to try out called Chris's Cool News Desk. What's it about? You're going to have to stick around to the second half of the show to find out. So you look luxurious listeners out there in like listen that. Land. Yeah. It's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith. Across the way is Chris Bruce.
Hey,
it's
everybody.
Just us this week, man.
Yeah, it's nice. Just you and I. Nice, intimate little car talk.
How you been?
I've been doing okay. It's been nice here in Ohio. Like I was telling our coworker, Brett, kind of 60 to 70 degrees. The leaves are just starting to fall. Just kind of the perfect kind of the pre-fall that you could get. And I know you've been not quite so lucky.
Little different for me. Actually, it could have been a lot worse. You know, part of the reason for my public service announcement, Rapid City, South Dakota, we picked up a little bit of snow yesterday. Actually, just a few inches here at the house, but you go 30 miles to the north, not even in the hills, and they got a foot of snow. You get up in the hills, they got 2 feet of snow. It's a little early, so we're going to talk about that a little bit later on.
With about going through the snow, I can't think of too many vehicles I'd rather go into snow through than the new Lexus LX 600.
Lexus LX 600. We'll just call it the Lexus LX.
Yeah.
And at some point, just so everybody knows, I'm going to say Lexus LS. Don't send me emails saying, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. That's LS is a car. I know Lexus LX, but you know what? Lexus LX, LS, LF, LT, L. There's a lot of L's, but let's talk about this because brand new debuted actually as we're recording. It just debuted a few hours ago, but for the listeners on Friday, it will have debuted a couple days ago. It's the new Lexus flagship. It's their new big body on frame SUV for now. Yes, for now. And I mean, it's a big deal because the previous generation was what, like 14 years old, I think thereabouts. So
might have even been 16. It was old.
It was old and it was due for a new generation. Yeah. And, you know, when the Land Cruiser debuted a while back, we pretty much knew, okay, the Land Cruiser isn't coming to the US, but the next LX probably will. And yes, this is available in the United States. And the stats are, you might be surprised to hear this, Bruce, it's got a 3.5 liter V6 that makes 409 horsepower and 479 pound feet of torque.
That sounds familiar. Where have I heard those numbers before?
Land Cruiser. It also has a 10 speed automatic Land Cruiser. It rides on 112 inch wheelbase Land Cruisers. It's down on weight compared to the previous generation by
450. Let's call it, it's 441. Let's call it 450 just for rounding.
Didn't the Land Cruiser also lose a little bit of weight?
Of course it did because it's exactly the same vehicle.
It's the luxurious Land Cruiser. The stats obviously are going to be the same. What makes this a Lexus really is when you get inside, the interior is completely different.
Yeah.
Among other things, it runs dual screens, dual touch screens in the center of the dash. It's got a 12.3 inch screen up top, a 7 inch screen underneath that. Now the top screen, it shows things like navigation, your audio control. It has the multi-terrain monitoring system. It's four cameras or so that gives you images all around the vehicle. You see those camera views on the top screen, and then the bottom screen, you can do things like climate control, but it can also be used as a supplement for the top screen. When you're in the multi-terrain monitor mode, it kind of gives you the vehicle stats while you're looking at all the various cameras. So, I mean, the takeaway is lots of tech, lots of screens. Now for the first time also, you're going to get an ultra luxury version because the Lexus LX.
Just a second, just because okay, what we're looking at on YouTube for anyone watching there, which I know most of our viewers do. So you can see the top screen and the bottom screen. In this image, you're seeing the top screen is showing the camera view. Bottom screen is kind of showing everything else. You can see you can adjust the suspension height. You see that you can see the accelerator and braking, the differential up there on the top left. The right, you have a, what do they call that? The tilt meter. There's a fancy name for
like the inclinometer.
That's the one. And yeah. You're a smart man. That's
I'm not a smart man. I just read something at some point.
No, inclinometer. That's the word.
The inclinometer.
The HVAC, you know, your temperatures, your seat heaters. It's all kind of right there.
So you have a touch screen that can help you control a touch screen.
Great.
I mean, hey, it's 2021. And it's Lexus, so you know it's going to be packed with luxury.
Yeah.
And when you look at the interior layout of the LX versus the Land Cruiser, it does look completely different. Maybe not entirely different. Like if you look at that top dash panel between the Land Cruiser and the LX, that top panel
is on the Land Cruiser. Yeah.
But yeah. It looks like that could probably interchange.
Yeah.
But yeah, the middle part, the center console, the wheel, the doors, that's all different. It gets really different in the back because with this ultra luxury version, you can have an option for just four seats.
Yep.
And those rear seats will recline, you know, like Maybach style. Maybach.
Here we're looking at it.
And super luxurious, right? Yeah. Super luxurious. They recline. What I like is the passenger seat can even go forward to give the person on the passenger side in the back a little bit more leg room.
And that is a very Japanese, Southeastern Asian thing. Genesis has done that on some models. Lexus, Infiniti, like those brands, especially in Japan, they have offered that, and you are going to get that on your Land Cruiser if you want. And if you're looking on YouTube, there's the image there. It's not fully reclined, but the front passenger seat will go all the way down, and then you can see that there is a leg assist there. You can kind of prop your legs up, prop your knees up, extend, and just be super comfortable.
Properly recline.
Yeah, and there's a huge console there with all sorts of buttons and stuff to press. And if you look lower down from that, you've got all sorts of, you know, places to plug in USB, USB-C, that type of stuff. So just a ton of tech in your off-roader.
Because, I mean, I believe those rear seats are also heated and cooled. There are air conditioning vents up in the ceiling that can blow down on like a breeze. Like specifically on you, not unlike from what I haven't experienced it yet, obviously, but from what I'm reading, it sounds a lot like air travel, you know, when you have the little vents over top. I'm assuming it's going to be far more pleasant and far more comfortable than, you know, sliding into an Airbus A321. But it's everything we would expect a Lexus to be. And more.
For those that want it, you can still get a third row.
You can
look at that here. They do not look nearly as luxurious as the second row seats. They
sort of look like cardboard cutouts of seats.
They kind of do, yeah. But they exist. If you're that person and you need those extra two seats in your LX, they're there. But I would much rather ride the second row than the first or the third row.
Right. And with the three row vehicles, I mean that the second row is going to have a standard bench layout. So you'll be able to get seven people in there if you need. But that ultra luxury version, the four passenger, it's a big vehicle for four passenger. But hey, that's, you know, that's the upper end of the scale. If you want a little bit more sport in your Lexus LX, they also now offer an F Sport that does, well, nothing to the engine. It also does nothing to the transmission, but it does. It
looks a hell of a lot better.
Oh my God. We haven't even discussed the looks yet. We're going to get to that in a minute. We just need to get the facts out of the way before I lose my freaking mind on how it looks.
So on YouTube, here we're looking at the F Sport. Here we're looking at the regular one. Go ahead. Dig in.
Well, let me first say that, okay, the F-Sport, you do get 22-inch wheels. The suspension is tweaked a little bit more. There's a limited slip differential at the back. I mean, not huge changes, but if that's a little bit more your thing, and honestly, if I had to drive this, I wouldn't mind riding in the back. I wouldn't want people to see me just because of the way it looks. But if I had to drive it, I'd probably go for the F Sport because it at least looks a little bit better on the outside. Of course, it's got the huge grill up front.
They all do though.
But when you, I mean, it's a distinctive look, but I just, I've never been a fan of Lexus, of their current design language. The standard LX 600 with just the big bars going across the front. I mean, we're looking at it now on YouTube. The headlights are set up way high. Mm-hmm. The grill is the typical Lexus spindle, but instead of a mesh style, it just has thick, solid. Well, I guess they're not solid. They have thick
openings in the middle. And before anyone calls me out on it, bars. If you're watching on YouTube, yeah, I clicked on the wrong picture. This one we're looking at now is F Sport. This is regular.
Yeah, the F Sport has the F Sport has the mesh style, you know, blacked out.
Yep.
When I look at the standard LX 600, the first thing I thought of was I think it's Klaatu from The Day the Earth Stood Still. Yep. If you remember that old movie that was then remade with Keanu Reeves, but I thought
I was thinking Gillette razor blade.
Gillette razor blade, that's a good one too. But then I realized, wait a minute. That's the destroyer from Thor. That grill
guy.
That front, that is the destroyer from Thor.
Okay.
That just that big metallic crossbarred look. You know, I hate to admit though, as I sit here looking at it, it is growing on me a little bit more. But
I wish we got the Land Cruiser nose. I think the Land Cruiser nose is better, especially the GR Sport Land Cruiser.
I really like
the reason the basic version of both the Land Cruiser and the LX are bad, but when you get into their sport trims, they look far better. And obviously that's a matter of personal opinion, but you know, if you're not looking at it straight on, any angle where you're not seeing that grill, I think it looks fine.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like the wheelbase should be a little bit longer. It looks a little bit, what's the word? Puffy.
Okay.
It looks a little bit puffy, like maybe it's allergic to nuts and maybe it had some peanuts and it's a little puffy in the edges because the allergic reaction is kicking in. But I mean, it's not terrible, but yeah, I'm the worst person to critique Lexus because from what I gather, I'm in the minority on how Lexus with their current design language, how their vehicles look.
I don't think you are from the auto journalists we talk to, from your Brandons, your Bretts, the folks that we talk to every day, you are not in the minority that the spindle grill looks bad. And honestly, I was a defender of the spindle grill for a while. I think it's time. Lexus, you guys got to change. Like you've done it for, it's been every bit of a decade now almost, right? Like
on some vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it proliferated across the range, but yep. It's time for a new look. It's played out now. They got to try something new.
I mean, I hesitate to say it's dated because everybody's big grill. It's just, it's kind of done.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was a really good step in the first place. You know, as I've said in the past with the Lexus front end, take that big grill and just put a divider in the middle. So you separate it from an upper grill with a lower grill. And I think it looks a gazillion times better. I need to do that. I need to play around with Photoshop a little bit with my meager skills to see how much better that could look. Or if there are any rendering artists out there that are listening to the show, give it a shot and then send it to us. podcast@motorone.com.
Yeah.
We'll share it on here. We'll give you a little bit of a plug. I think I would bet a gazillion dollars that the new LX would look better, especially in F Sport trim, if it had just a little separation right there when that hourglass kind of shape scrunches in. Mm-hmm. Put your little separation right in there, almost like a mini bumper, denote the upper from the lower, and we could be right there.
So I hadn't thought this before, but as we look at these pictures, it makes me wonder, who is this vehicle for? Like, you know, maybe if you live in like an Aspen or a Telluride or something, like, you know, one of these places out west that get a bunch of snow but have ski lodges. If you live out there, I could kind of see it. But I just, well, it makes me long for the land. It makes me long for an affordable Land Cruiser. Yeah. I wish we could get a vehicle with this kind of toughness, but without all the luxury. And that's kind of what the Land Cruiser is.
Well, you hit a good point, because we know this is going to be terrifically expensive. We don't know pricing yet. Lexus hasn't mentioned any pricing. They have told us
what the current LX goes for. So it's at least going to be that.
Why don't you look that up? I've got a few other things to talk about. I mean, obviously it's going to come with all of the latest Lexus safety gear, self-driving, or not self-driving, but driver assist systems. You know, your radar cruise, all of that. Lexus does say it'll be available in the U.S. Beginning of 2022. They don't have a set date yet. They didn't give us any pricing information yet. We know it's going to be terrifically expensive. And
so the current LX 570, the two row model, starts at $86,930. If you want three seats, that's $91,930. And if you want the Inspiration Series, which is kind of sort of the luxury model with the nice seats and stuff we've been looking at here, the current version of that is $99,310. Mm-hmm. So it's
right there with the Escalade. It's going to be there with the Grand Wagoneer.
Yep.
People looking for a luxurious four-wheel drive vehicle, if they're living in areas with inclement weather, or even just not necessarily inclement weather, but areas where they might want to trek off road. I mean, I guess I would then question whether or not anybody's going to take their Lexus LX 600 off road. It's got, it's going to come with six different modes to choose for your terrain: auto mode, dirt mode, sand, mud, deep snow, rock. Will people take their $100,000 Lexus LX 600 over rocks? I don't know.
Probably about as many of those could take their Grand Wagoneer or their Escalade or whatever off-road. Like, it's going to be a very small number, but it's going to be capable of that.
Yep.
And the interesting thing is, kind of like the Suburban, we don't really have a Jeep version, but you know, this is kind of the one that they're going to make all their money on, but you are going to have a lesser model that, if you want this, that's going to be available, except not to us. And that's the Land Cruiser. That you have the Escalade, that if you want all the luxury and all the ability, you go for that. But if you don't need that, you've got the Yukon and Suburban there, which are also pricey vehicles, but still significantly less than what an Escalade.
Right. Model. Exactly. So yeah, Lexus LX 600, it is here. It's not the Land Cruiser, but it sort of is at the same time. And one thing we forgot to mention, if you are following us on YouTube especially, be sure to like and subscribe, hit the notifications, all of the drills that you know, that help you make sure you know when we have our new content up, and it makes us look good in the eyes of YouTube, which means we can do more weird, wacky stuff. Let's shift from some Toyota Lexus talk to some weird, wacky Chevrolet talk. Because some Bruce,
mystery Chevrolet talk.
Some maybe. Mystery, because you've been covering this here the last few days.
Yes.
Of course, we know that Chevrolet is about to come out with their new Corvette Z06. That debut is coming very soon.
Yep, a couple of weeks.
But we also know that there are other C8 Corvettes in the pipeline. We've been seeing some spy photos recently of cars that that are being called the E-Ray, which is supposed to be a hybrid version of the C8, basically using the 6.2 liter V8 with some hybrid powertrain. But are we seeing an E-Ray? Because Bruce, I remember when these spy photos came in and you raised a really good point. It's like, well, we're being told that this is probably an E-Ray, but there's at least some evidence to suggest it's not. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. So here's the thing. When I've been writing about cars for a while, and as I was kind of trained in this, it was always, with spy photos, with kind of anything that gets submitted to you, you always take it with a certain grain of salt. It's not that you don't think these people are trustworthy or anything like that, but maybe since you're watching things as much, maybe you kind of have this kernel of knowledge that they haven't picked up on. And we got these spy photos, and we also had a video this week that are purporting to show us the Corvette E-Ray. And like you said, for anyone who's not familiar, the E-Ray is allegedly going to be the first hybrid Corvette. So there will be an electric motor, at least one. Another rumor we've seen said two electric motors powering the front axle. You'll still have the 6.2 liter V8 powering the rear axle. And so we've been getting these spy shots from the Nürburgring. And we can tell they're the Nürburgring because we see spy shots from there all the time.
Yeah, we're familiar with the ring. And these shots, by the way, are just extraordinarily clear. Nice up-close shots. The car isn't on the track. The car is just outside the track.
And that's at part
slower
of the,
speeds.
Yeah, I'm happy you raised that because that's part of the thing, is that when an electrified vehicle tests on the Nürburgring, there's a sticker they have to put on. Basically, if that vehicle were to crash, it tells anyone that's responding, oh, this vehicle's electrified. You can't just, you know, spray a ton of water on it. There could be some other thing. The vehicles we have seen have not had that sticker on them. However, they also, we have not yet seen this vehicle on the track. And that's important because, and you actually were the one that raised this, you reached out to some of our spy photographers, and they said that since we haven't seen it on the track, maybe they are waiting until they put it on there to put this mandated sticker on.
Could very well be. It could be, you know, prior to being certified or whatever they need to get on the track.
And so we don't know. I'm going to switch over here for anyone watching. I'm not going to show the video. I'm just going to show kind of the lead image because honestly, it tells the whole story. And that is that also at the Nürburgring, they have been testing this vehicle kind of in a flotilla of Corvettes, as I called it, because I like the that Corvettes are also a ship for anyone that doesn't know. And a flotilla is a bunch of boats.
Yes. Very clever. Well done, Mr. Bruce. I like that.
Anyway, so the image you're looking at now, and I'm not going to play the video just for copyright reasons, but we have what is clearly a Z06 at the front. We have maybe an E-Ray next. And then we have two standard C8 Corvettes behind them, one in red, one in orange. And if you watch this video, they're basically all going around together. And a few times the E-Ray is by itself, or it kind of pulls off the road and then the guy pulls back on. But notably, and I wrote this story, you can never hear any sort of electric motor noise from it. Like an electric motor makes a distinct sound. And I think anyone who's kind of heard one knows that it's that very high pitched sound. It, you know, it can kind of sound like a supercharger whine. But none of the ones that we are seeing, at least so far, kind of have that stink sound. And the reason I'm saying all this is that I can't say for certain what we are seeing is the E-Ray, despite what this spy video and what spy photographers are saying. We covered a story, and actually you covered a story, I believe it was in March, of a report saying that there would not be a Corvette GS Grand Sport.
No Grand Sport. It was
for this generation.
I mean, it was an alleged leak of the Corvette lineup that put the E-Ray replacing the Grand Sport. Now, previously, the Grand Sport was really just the regular Corvettes dress up a little bit.
Stepping zone between a standard Corvette and a Z06.
Right, but
maybe the engine performance of a Z06, but you wanted a hotter looking Corvette, the Grand Sport was the one you went with.
Right. So we have the E-Ray that in theory could replace the Grand Sport, but it would offer a fairly significant power bump. I mean, the rumors that we're hearing, if the E-Ray is accurate, says what, like 600 and change for horsepower?
We have heard anywhere between 600 and 650. In the one story I wrote, I would guess more like 650, because the rumors for the Z06 is that it would have, I believe, 615. I'm going to double check that, but it's right around there. And it wouldn't make sense. Chevy wouldn't launch their very first hybrid all-wheel drive Corvette and then have it have less power than the Z06, 617, not 615. I was right in there. To me, that doesn't make sense, especially from a marketing move.
I don't know about that, though. I don't know that I agree with that, because okay. if E-Ray is supposed to replace Grand Sport, Grand Sport is below the Z06, right? Sure. So if we're following that playbook, again, all alleged, because I mean, yeah, Chevrolet doesn't have any official comment on any of this.
No.
But yeah, so I mean, that's why we've been raising questions, because, okay, we didn't see the identifying marks on what should be hybrid vehicles at the Nürburgring. Also, the prototypes that we're seeing, I mean, they have the very distinctive Z06 front fascia.
I forgot about that. That's worth bringing up.
They're wearing the Z06 front fascia, but when you
go the Z06 inlets on the rear end, or the, you know, the rear fender inlets, they're the same as the Z06.
Yep, those are the same. But at the back, instead of the center exhaust, you have the standard looking exhaust, the small quad tips, two on each side. So, I mean, it's an interesting quandary. There was another article that we had written, or actually, it was Jacob Olivia. One of our colleagues that wrote this. Let me get this shared up here really quick, because
I think
it's worth mentioning. It was another E-Ray sighting, supposedly at a Cars and Coffee, and the video again. You know,
can't show
the video. We don't want to show the video just in case there are copyright issues. It's through the Colorado Cars and Coffee Facebook group.
But scroll up to his lead image, you can see that is the same. You've got dual exhaust tips on each side.
Yep.
And otherwise, it's a Z06 body. This one had the weird wheel covers on it, like they didn't want us to see whatever brakes or wheels were on it.
This didn't necessarily have the same Z06 themed items on it.
Yeah.
And it was said to be rolling completely silently. As Jacob points out in the article, I mean, you know, videos, they can be manipulated.
And the Corvette, you know, you could silence the exhaust, essentially. Not that there's no air coming out, but with the modes on it, you could have a quiet exhaust mode that would,
right,
maybe with the right video, right microphone, you wouldn't hear the engine.
I mean, I think it's a given that there will be a hybrid Corvette. We know that's going to be. We know there's going to be an all electric Corvette, because it's been pretty much given away, and also everything is going electric. So we're not debating that this isn't going to happen. We're just questioning whether or not what we're seeing right now really is this alleged E-Ray.
Right. It's fun, honestly. It's a fun little mystery, because it's nice not to know what a car is. Like, you and I, we write about cars every day in and out. And most times when we see spy shots, we know more or less exactly what we're looking at. Mm-hmm. It's a rare case where we don't. And this is a case where there's at least a question that, you know, basically the moment I see it on the Nürburgring and see a sticker on it, I'm going to know, oh, okay, it's the E-Ray. I was wrong. I shouldn't have questioned it. But right now, there's still that twinge of doubt in my head. And that makes it fun, because doubt is kind of fun. That, you know, maybe this isn't the E-Ray. Maybe that's coming later. Maybe they are just going to make a GS.
If it's not the E-Ray, then okay, then what is it then?
Yeah.
Could it be a GS? Are they intentionally trying to keep the GS nice and quiet to make us think otherwise? You know, lots of things happening there. And there's still all kinds of interest in Corvette. I know there are going to be probably some listeners. We certainly get emails every now and again. Oh, you guys, why are you covering the Corvette so much? Well, because for every one person that is sick of Corvette, there's probably 20 or 30 that are eager to hear more about it. So, and I mean, like it or not, it's been a game-changing vehicle, not just for Chevrolet and General Motors, but for the supercar side of things. Being able to have that kind of performance for easily under $100,000.
Yeah.
It's been a game changer. Now when the all-wheel drive hybrids do come out, whether it's E-Ray or whether it ends up being just Zora, you know, much further down the road with a lot more power, that's probably going to be a game changer too.
So real quick, I can address that. You wrote up a story. This was several months ago. This was early 2021. But there was a report that came out that it alleged to give us the roadmap of what Corvette was going to be. So start with the standard Corvette, Z06 is next. That one also claimed that E-Ray would be after that. And with that, again, like I said, either one or two electric motors powering the front axle. After that, ZR1 is allegedly going to take that flat plane crank V8 from the Z06 and add a pair of turbos to it. And so you get, the alleged number is 850 horsepower. And then come 2025, the king of the heap, the Zora, would take that same engine, so the twin turbocharged 5.5-liter V8, but then add electric motors at both the front and the rear axle and allegedly make 1,000 horsepower. So that's...
Yeah, that's kind of been the... at least with the Zora, I mean, that's been the rumors around Zora for quite some time.
Yeah.
And I mean, that roadmap, again, this is all alleged information I mean, GM... I mean, the automakers will never go on record for future vehicles like that. Nothing like that at all.
Because they're afraid that you, the listener, are going to wait. Because if you have the money, you're like, well, why am I going to buy an E-Ray when a year after that, ZR1 is going to come out? And a year after that, the Zora is going to come out. I'll just save my pennies.
I'll just wait and get the top dog, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, also, they want to have a little bit of mystery in there, too.
Oh, of course.
But I mean, if that roadmap is correct, we have the standard C8 Stingray. We know the Z06 is coming next, which that roadmap says that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. We're now seeing, far more occurrences of prototypes that could be an E-Ray.
Right. And that's supposed to arrive
which
in
would
2023,
come next.
Go on sale in 2023, which would work perfectly because we know, Z06 is going to debut later this month. It'll be on sale for the 2023 model year. E-Ray, maybe it'll be on sale a year, 6 months after that. Mm-hmm. And then ZR1 and then Zora.
So, yeah, that could be a legit thing. So I guess my advice there is to stay tuned. Thank you, Chevrolet, for not teasing the Corvette constantly. Yeah. We're seeing all kinds of prototypes. We know that automakers know, okay, if we throw some camouflage on a car and send it out, somebody's going to see photos. Somebody's going to start talking about it. The news outlets will pick it up. That's free publicity for them. So we know that at least some of this going on from automakers is, hey, we'll just send out this fleet. Somebody's probably going to get some pictures of it. That'll be fine.
And not only that, but our spies, a lot of them are just people that kind of just camp out at the Nürburgring, not camp out literally, but like they just live near there. You can, the industry testing pool days are published beforehand. Yep. Like anyone could just look at the schedule and be like, oh, I'm going to show up the Nürburgring on this day. And anything that goes around, I'm going to know it's someone in the industry testing it, whether it's Chevy, BMW, Porsche, just, any automaker, like
right on.
It's not, if you're there, it's not that hard to figure out.
Right on. So keep your eyes peeled. If you see any funny stickers on a Corvette with camo wrap, we want to hear about it.
So sorry, I keep extending the segment. I know we got to get moving, but
no, extend it away, man. We're rambling. This is the core of rambling.
I'm not going to be able to pull it up here because this just came to my head, but we have also been seeing Z06 and at least according to one report, an alleged E-Ray testing in southeastern Ohio. Apparently there's some like hotels and stuff around there. I don't know if we covered it on the show, but if not, look on Motor One. There was a guy who snuck in. There was a guard who was going around and a guy snuck and tried to get a bunch of looks at the Z06s that were there.
I'm looking at our website right now, Bruce. Is that from September? Is that pretty recent?
Sounds right. Yeah.
Four Corvette prototypes caught leaving hotel parking lot.
That one. And then also the guy that caught the magnesium transmission on one is also all of those have been testing in southeastern Ohio. So if you live in the Zanesville, Cambridge area, you might end up seeing some camouflage Corvettes around. Just saying.
Well, let's take a look here. We're looking at it on YouTube. This is a Z06 at the Nürburgring.
Oh, no, that's at the Nürburgring. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can tell you that here. Vamp for me just a second. I know exactly.
Okay. I mean, this article has a video and I know we've seen a few videos I remember I covered a video, it was probably a couple months ago, where it was even questioning, okay, we think there are some Z06s here, but we also think there are some ZR1s in the mix. The video was full of sound. There wasn't, if there was a hybrid hiding in there somewhere, the sound of high revving V8 certainly drowned it out. But yeah, I mean, we see those every now and again.
Here, I got it here. Again, copyright is dumb. I'm just going to say it. Copyright is stupid. I'm not going to play.
Don't say that, Bruce, because now people are going to be ripping off all of our articles and like, oh yeah, they said copyright was stupid. But it's again, not actually stupid. Actually, so, hey, I think did I write that?
No, that was an Ongle story.
Oh, okay. Maybe you know what? I think that was one that I found and put in the river to have written up.
Yeah. But again, this was another one. This was in Marietta, Ohio, which also, if you look at a map, that's Southeastern Ohio. So if you happen to live in Southeastern Ohio, keep your eyes peeled because Corvettes are testing around there, because we've got several videos of them. So it's worth noting.
Yeah, it's exciting time for Corvette people. That's very much
Corvette much builds in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is only about an hour, maybe 2 hours from that area. So it's not that far.
Lots of testing going on. I'm excited about electrified Corvettes. I know there are a lot of people that aren't, but you know what? It's the future, and it's powerful, and electric motors are far less complicated than gasoline engines. And yes, gasoline engines make great sound. That'll be a diatribe for another episode.
But you have a diatribe for now, right?
Well, I won't call this a diatribe. Instead of talking about some of our listener comments today, I thought I would take just a little bit of time. And Bruce, if you have anything you want to add to this as well, go ahead and chime in.
Okay.
I'm a big stickler when it comes to wintertime driving and just making sure that you don't just take it for granted. And by that, I mean, don't go off and clear like a 2-inch by 2-inch square from your windshield when it's covered in snow and then just drive away.
Or your rear window for that
matter. I think this is, look, this is fun. It's like I'm driving in a submarine. Don't be that person. Just don't be that person. This
Or your rear window.
Or your rear window. Or your side window. Take your brush. Anyways, I'm getting a little ahead of myself because, yes, we had our first snowfall of the year here at Casa de Smith in Rapid City, South Dakota. It came as something of a surprise because, yes, there's a big storm system that came in. It was supposed to snow up in the hills. I'm not up in the hills. I'm a little bit lower and it was supposed to stay all rain, and Bruce and all of the other Motor One family, they were with me yesterday when I started posting pictures of what the hell is this crap. And at one point, I mean, I was right on the rain snow line. At one point, it was snowing about 2 inches an hour here, which is a pretty hefty snowfall. But picked up maybe about 4.5 inches of snow through the day yesterday. But I mean, it was so wet and mixed with rain. The ground is warm. It melted quickly. I'm looking outside my window now and it's pretty much all gone at this point. But you get up in the hills 30 miles away. Yeah. 1.5 feet, 2 feet of snow, pretty early snowfall, but it's a good time to just kind of remind people, okay, here comes winter. It's going to snow. If you're in an area where you get snow, don't be the person that goes sailing off into the ditch first on the first or second snowfall. It's super embarrassing. And also you could end up killing yourself or somebody else. So super dangerous. So just some of my tips and advice, because I grew up in the Lake Michigan snow belts of Michigan. I've handled snow pretty well my entire life. I've also been fortunate to have some pretty good instructors, especially with my father being a retired semi driver. He would drive a loaded car carrier through all of this stuff. So, I mean, the basics are, one, obviously slow down. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, don't just automatically slow down because you think you have to. Pay attention. Just like look at the road. I know that sounds completely ridiculous, but I can't tell you how many times I'm driving out here on roads that are completely fine, but because there are a few flakes falling in the sky, and it's cold, people they'll automatically click into, I need to drive 2 miles an hour. Sometimes that can be just as dangerous as driving fast, especially if you're on a 50, 60, 70 mile an hour highway, right? So just kind of keep your wits about you. Look at the road. You could always put down your window, feel the backside of your mirror. If you think there might be some freezing rain or some freezing precipitation, you're going to catch it on the backside of that mirror pretty much right away as soon as it's falling.
Because I've never thought of that one.
Because the backside of the mirror, the backside of the mirror, it's already going to be cool. So if that precipitation is frozen, it's going to be sticking right there. If you're nervous about touching your brake, to check the conditions, you know, the traction on the road, you can feel the mirror, see what's going on there. A big one for me, if you're on a road that's snow covered, you have a couple strips that people have been driving through, those strips get completely icy. A lot of times, I won't say every time, I'll say 8 times out of 10, I'm completely pulling that number out of my behind. 8 times out of 10, if you move to the left or right just a little bit, just out of those tracks where it's snow, you're not going to be on ice. You're just going to be on snow. And snow still isn't as good as dry pavement, but it's a lot better than ice. So don't just play follow the leader driving along in those two tracks. If you're on a very slippery road, try moving a little bit left or a little bit right. And you know what? Even if you have to drive, maybe don't sue me if you end up doing something stupid here, but ultimately when you're driving a car and you're in a low traction situation, traction is like priority number one. So even if you have to bump over very, very close to the shoulder, or maybe even touch that shoulder a little bit, if you can get traction where the other person doesn't, you're going to be able to keep control of your vehicle a lot better. You're going to be able to avoid situations. I've had to use that a few times in my driving career just to make sure, okay, I don't know if the person behind me is going to be able to stop, but at least I won't be slamming into the person in front of me in case something bad happens. Another good winter driving tip that I don't think anybody ever picks up on. Okay, imagine this scenario. You're on a hill. You're cresting over the hill. It's very slippery, whether it's icy or just like a really slick, hard packed snow. You're going down the hill and maybe there's a stop sign or something at the bottom of the hill where you need to stop.
I've been there, man.
Now, if you have a manual transmission, not a big deal. You push in the clutch, you just take it out of gear, and you can very, very easily, you can modulate your brake. In an automatic transmission, shift to neutral. People don't realize this. Shifting to neutral.
I would caution that a little. You have to know your conditions.
You have to know your conditions, but if you take the car out of gear, while the car is in gear, you need to apply brake pressure, right, not just to stop the car, but to overcome the power that's already going to your wheels, whether it's front or back. So popping it into neutral, you no longer need to try to overcome that force. If the road is extremely slippery, the force required to just simply overcome the power going to the wheels might be more than the road conditions can handle. You throw it into neutral, you can modulate your brake a lot better. You can slow that car with much less force. And again, that's something that saved me a few times where I'm coming up to an intersection. Okay, I need to take this car out of gear. You take it out of gear, much, much easier to stop. And my last winter driving tip here that doesn't just apply to winter, but it applies to any time. I like to use this one a lot, especially on higher speed roads. Say you're on a 40 or 50 mile an hour road and not a limited access highway, but you're coming up to a crossroad. You see a vehicle, it's some distance away. At 50 miles an hour, you're covering quite a bit of distance. Never mind if you're going 60 or even faster in some places. Your eye, as you're further away, you probably won't detect, we'll say, the front of the vehicle moving if you're looking at the fender or the hood. But if you're looking at the wheel, you're probably going to notice the wheel start to turn before you see the vehicle itself moving, just because the wheel is going to be making more of a movement. Do you follow what I'm saying, Bruce?
Sort of.
The wheel will be making a more noticeable movement at low speed versus the vehicle itself. So if you see that wheel starting to move, that could give you a quarter second, half second heads up that that person's about to pull out in front of you.
Oh, I see.
Okay. That could be just enough extra reaction time to save the day. That doesn't happen very often, but there have been a few instances where I've come up on a vehicle. Okay. It's still some distance away, but at this speed, if that person pulls out in front of me, I'm going to be in trouble. I'm not watching the roof. I'm not watching the windshield. I'm not focused on the fender. I'm looking down at the front wheel on the car. And if I see that front wheel start to move, I'm going to notice that right away. And that can sometimes give you just a little bit of an extra reaction time. And that, friends, is Chris's semi-diatribe, because I had to go out do some shopping last night on slush-covered roads that really weren't that bad. But damn, did I see some flipping idiots already. So it snowed a little bit here. If you live in the northern latitudes, it's going to start snowing for you pretty soon. Don't be that person. And for God's sakes, don't assume that you have all-wheel drive. You're invincible.
So wait, but thank you for mentioning that, because I wanted to give some of my own.
Yes.
And mine does the all. So the thing that I tell my wife, and this is obviously not literal, but she has a 2012 Subaru Outback. She's owned it literally since new. It's got her through many of an Ohio winter. But the thing that I stress both to her and I is that all-wheel drive does not mean all-wheel brake. And obviously all the wheels do break. I'm not.
And it doesn't mean all wheel steer either.
Right. But what I mean by that is that all wheel drive means you do have that traction in snow, ice, whatever, all of the wheels
accelerate.
But when it comes time that you need to stop at that stop sign, that vehicle slowing down ahead, all wheel drive doesn't help you at all.
Nope.
It's the same as any other vehicle. Like,
it might make things worse because your all-wheel drive vehicle is generally heavier than your front-wheel drive or your rear-wheel drive.
Marginally, to some level, yeah.
To some, yep.
That, you know, you need to treat any situation that you need to brake for in slippery situations as seriously as any other vehicle that you could own, whether it's front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, whatever. That all-wheel drive does, it has a traction benefit. There's no denying that. But when it comes time to stop, that all-wheel drive, that stops helping you completely.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you have to treat a vehicle with respect. And that comes to my second thing is I just simplify it as eyes up. That when things start getting slippery, you don't look you're not looking at the hood of the car. You are trying to look as many cars in front of you as you can realistically see. Because if five cars in front of you starts to slow down, you need to anticipate that everyone else in that chain also can't slow down nearly as quickly as they usually would in an ideal traction situation. So guy number five starts to slow down and you see his brake lights. Don't wait for 4, 3, 2, and then you to slow down. Guy five slowing down, you're already easing off that accelerator and maybe just touching the brake, because you don't know what he's doing. You don't know what any one of those people are doing. But you just need to, like, you know, you don't want to be accelerating forward. Absolutely. Just take your foot off the accelerator. Go more slowly than you would think.
And that extra quarter second, that extra half second, that can make a complete difference.
Oh, totally. And
make a complete difference
in situations where,
yeah,
I'm on the freeway in like pouring snow and I see car 4, 5, 6, whatever in front of me start to slow down. And I just take my foot off the accelerator, or maybe I just cover the brake enough to not enough to slow the car down, but just enough to activate the brake lights that the guy behind me knows, because that chain reaction starts to happen. And that's something to realize.
Yep.
And that's with any vehicle, times. All-wheel drive, front-wheel drive, it doesn't matter. That just keep eyes up is important. That, you know, keep an eyes up as to what is going on in front of you, not just the car in front of you, but the car in front of that person and that person and that person.
Yep. No, very astute. And when it comes to all-wheel drive, I like to use this equation, okay? Driving consists of acceleration, braking, and turning, right? That's three metrics. All-wheel drive gives you an advantage on one.
I call it one and a half, because if you have torque vectoring on modern you might be able to get a little turning help, but it's not. Maybe, you're right.
Maybe, but I mean, that's a very fine line.
You're right.
Realistically, all-wheel drive gives you a 33% advantage.
Yeah.
A good set of snow tires, that helps you accelerate, that helps you turn, that helps you brake. And in fact, I think in an earlier episode, when we were talking with Jonathan Benson, yep. I used the equation. It's like, okay, your all-wheel drive car with all-season tires, with your all-wheel drive, okay, that's 33% of driving the vehicle. You have an advantage 33%. Mm-hmm. So my Mustang with snow tires, that gives me an advantage for stopping and turning. So that means I have 66%. Does that mean my Mustang is better? Not accelerating, but it's stopping and turning? Yes. That's how big of a difference tires can make. Yeah. I won't go into a tire thing because we still have a new segment to talk about.
And let me do a quick tire thing. And okay. I understand.
We're rambling tonight, man.
No, this is super quick. And I understand that economically, a lot of people just plain don't have the money to own two sets of tires. It's unfortunate. It's whatever. But it's the realistic world. And so that's why I want to tell people as much as I can, no matter what car you have, that paying attention, that eyes up thing, that watching what's around you, it can save you. It really can. And it doesn't cost anything. And you're not wrong that having a set of all seasons or a set of three seasons and winters is best. But I understand that that's not realistic for everyone.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's an initial investment, but then when you realize it, okay.
Oh, you're right.
You're basically running two sets of tires.
Right.
Over time, you
could. And the winter ones will last two, three seasons. You know, it's not going to be a one season. It's not an every year investment.
Oh, I'm worried right now that the winter tires for my Mazda are just a little too old. They might be getting a little weather checked. I've had them 9 seasons now.
Oh wow, yeah, that's starting to push it.
I mean, I keep them stored inside, so mm-hmm. I mean, they're still in good shape. There's still lots of tread, but yeah. So, what's your take on winter, everybody? Podcast@motorone.com. Shoot us your thoughts. Shoot us your experiences on surviving winter driving. And that doesn't mean just, you know, like power sliding every corner.
That can be fun too.
It can be fun. But there's a time and a place for that sort of thing. And exactly. Downtown Rapid City, not a good place for it.
Not a good place.
I won't say anything more about that. Let's try this new segment. So Bruce and I were talking, and as he said earlier, we're news writers, right? We're automotive news writers. We're writing upwards of 20 plus articles a week. On everything from major debuts like the Lexus LX to things like a truckload of Corvettes catching on fire, to things like check out these neat corrugated boxes that are saving automakers millions of dollars, which I just wrote yesterday, which sounds kind of ridiculous. I found it very interesting. I'm going to be honest. Okay. I found it very interesting. Logistics. Hey, that stuff's interesting. But yeah, the point being, all kinds of stuff we're writing. Some of it, maybe you're reading. Hopefully, you're following MotorOne.com. Hopefully, you're getting your daily automotive news from MotorOne.com. And especially, hopefully, you're following Christopher Smith and Chris Bruce at MotorOne, along with all of the other writers. But hey, we're going to plug ourselves a little bit because this is our show, damn it.
Yeah.
We're here. So we thought, well, you know what? With all the articles that we're writing, maybe we can just occasionally share some of the interesting ones that we thought were interesting or cool over the last week. So welcome to Chris's Cool News Desk. We have a couple articles each that we're just going to talk about a little bit, share with you in case you didn't catch them from the last week, and offer a little bit of commentary, maybe some behind the scenes if we have it. Bruce, do you want to lead us off or I can start us off? What would you prefer?
I can get this thing started.
All right, let's get us started. Get us started here.
I want to talk about this Restomod Jeep CJ8 that I covered.
Ooh, interesting.
I thought so. It is from an outdoor clothing company. They do boots and shoes called Ball and Buck. Ball and Buck. Sorry, I want to make sure it wasn't Bell. And so they recently, as of 2020, maybe late 2019, they started getting into the Restomod game as well. So in addition to clothing, they are now building cars. And they have this resto-modded Jeep CJ8 Scrambler. And so that is the truck version of the Jeep CJ7. Now, what I don't like about this thing, what I absolutely hate about this thing, is that it costs $125,000 to start. Mm-hmm. And if you want the diesel engine as opposed to the GMLS engine, that's an extra $45,000. That... I understand you have to make a profit from what you make.
Right.
I understand that. I respect that. But I hate that that has to be the price that, you know, at that point, you know, that's just a ton of money. You're limiting it to such a core clientele. But this thing is so cool. I am going to start.
I mean, do you know, I haven't followed some of the classic Jeep values very closely. What are those older CJs going for?
So CJ8s, I was actually looking at this on, I want to say it was Hagerty. They have gone up. They are well into the high teens, if not kind of 30s for
in nice condition, not like your neighbor's lifted CJ where they dropped a 350 into it, you know, last week and it sort of runs kind of thing. We're talking nice ones.
And specifically for a CJ8, which is the pickup, and they made far fewer than those than they made CJ7s. It's the numbers in the thousands rather than the tens or hundreds of thousands. Mm-hmm. And it's just a cool looking truck, you know? And what I especially liked about it, and anyone who knows me is going to understand this, and I'm clicking through the photos now to get to it, but it has a dog kennel in the back. So if you want to take, oh, here he is. If you want to take your friend along, he's got a full kennel in the back that he can chill in. Or I would never put him back there. I'd put him up in the cab with me, but to each your own. But yeah, it's a cool rig and I love it. I just wish it wasn't so expensive. But I also understand that that's kind of the cost of doing business, that there's no way that you could build something like this and do it like at a normal guy price. That I don't think you could build this vehicle and sell it for $45,000. And right. In addition to taking the CJ8, they do a full restoration to it. And then they also add a ton of off-road parts, a lot of ARB parts. ARB is well known in the off-road scene. They're kind of differentials and stuff like that. And then it's got all the other stuff as well. You can kind of see there's an awning on the back. It's got the snorkel. It's got, like I said, the dog kennel. It's got everything. And it's cool. And I want it. And I'm never going to be able to afford it. I'm never going to be able to do this.
You said a very key word that I'm glad you said. This vehicle has a full restoration in addition to the added parts that are part of the package. A full restoration by itself is not easy.
No, it's not.
I mean, when you take a vehicle right down to its frame, refinish everything, make it brand. I mean, that alone is expensive. Even with something that somebody would perceive as, you know, as simple as a Jeep. I'm not saying it's simple. It's not going to be simple at all. A full resto is never simple. But then when you do that resto and then you add the extra parts, there's a big cost there. So it's a shame that it costs that much.
I just wish
I'm not surprised.
It's not. Right. Yeah, it's not a shame. I guess it's just I wish it was more accessible. And just to go through the parts. So ARB, the ARB parts on this are the front and rear air locking differentials, the air compressor for the tires. It's got a snorkel intake, a rack system, LED spotlights on the rack system. It's got a propane tank storage section and extra water and fuel tanks. So you can really go out there and you've got fresh water and fuel to get you back. So it's got, and you carry your dog like that. That's a great overlanding vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish I could afford one. Maybe that's just it. Maybe it's just like sour grapes on my part.
There's, well, it's, I don't think it's sour grapes. I mean, I would love to afford something like that too. But there's, I mean, there's a market that's certainly catering to those who can. We see it a lot with the older Land Rover Defenders.
Yep.
How many older Land Rover Defenders have we seen restored and then fitted with an LS V8 that then go for like $200,000 or even more? So I mean, yeah, hey, the stuff's out there. I dig the Jeep. I think that was very cool.
Yeah, I like it. I love the idea of it. I wish, like I said, I wish this thing was $40,000 to $50,000, but also I understand that the company making it could never make money on that price.
The resto alone was probably $50,000.
Yeah. You know, the truck was probably 20 to start with, you know, just to buy a ratty truck. And then, like you said, $50,000 to restore it and then $50,000 in parts. And right there, you're at $125,000. So yeah, it is what it is. What do you got?
Is what it is. Well, it's interesting that you picked a Jeep because my first one is also going to be a Jeep. I don't know how we get these coincidences that pop up like this every now and again. Not only is it a Jeep, but it is a Jeep pickup truck. This is a rendering that I wrote about.
This is the one I thought it was going to be. Okay.
On October 7th. Now I want to be clear. This is an unofficial rendering and I didn't do it. It was done by, and I hope I pronounced this name correctly. Ambelakic.
Now you screwed me up. Abimelech.
Abimelech. There we go.
Yeah. It's a biblical name.
Abimelech. Well, see, maybe I should read the book more. Darn it. Abimelech Design on Facebook. We cover a fair amount of renderings, not as much as we used to. But we cover a fair amount of renderings because they dive into our imagination. They show us the things that would probably never become reality. And of all of them, I would have to say that this particular artist is probably the best that we run across every now and again.
He is very talented.
Extremely talented.
What I especially love is that he will take a modern vehicle, like the one that comes immediately to mind is the Grand Cherokee Trackhawk. Mm-hmm. And so he will take a Grand Cherokee Trackhawk, the modern one, but then take all of those cues and put one on from the 90s. And he does it so perfectly. That's like, yeah, why didn't they make that in the 90s? It's perfect. Like,
yeah. And it's like, it looks like it was made.
He's a talented guy.
And it's not just images on the outside, which I'll show you here in a bit. Also images like under the hood, engine swaps. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to talk about this. A Jeep Gladiator two-door rendering looks bad to the bone. And I mean, it does. I don't really have much to tell you about this other than
because it's not real.
It's not real. It's a rendering of a modern, just little two-door Gladiator, which I think this would really maybe fit more with the Scrambler as opposed to a Gladiator.
Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. And it's funny that you bring this up because I was talking to Dom, who is another member of our team. I live like 45 minutes from the Jeep Toledo factory, and there are a ton of these in my town. Obviously not single cab Gladiators, but the Gladiator. And every time I look at one, I'm like, a single cab would look better. It just would.
And I
look at these renderings, and I'm like, yeah, well, it looks better.
And what we're looking at right now, because you know, when I saw the rendering, I was like, oh, I want to say I've seen that somewhere before. This isn't the exact same thing. But a few years ago, Jeep made their J6 concept, which is a real two-door short bed Gladiator, basically. And we're looking at that now. This is a real vehicle, and I just think that looks awesome. I would much rather have that than the Gladiator, but we know realistically the two doors, nobody wants a two-door truck anymore. Everybody wants the four-door trucks. The four doors, if I remember correctly, the Jeep, the Rubicon, the Wrangler Rubicon Unlimited, with the four doors, the four-door Jeep outsells the two door by something like 3-1 or 4-1.
Yeah, maybe it's high.
It's way up there. So the idea of one of these going into production it's just not going to happen. But yeah, as I was looking at this concept,
but it looks so good. It looks right. Like, that's what you think, like, oh, a Jeep pickup truck should look like, rather than having the double cab. Like,
yep, the proportions
look right.
The proportions look right. Now, yeah. Let me, I don't think we're going to run into any copyright issues here. Let me jump over to the Facebook page here. Let me bring that up, because there are other images there of this rendering that I wanted to share.
Okay. I haven't seen these.
Because it's, like I said, he doesn't just create images.
Oh, did he do of the exterior. Ads? He does that sometimes.
I mean, like here's, look at this rendering. This has, according to the post, this has a fictional Ford Godzilla swap, a 7.3 liter engine swap. So this rendering shows the Jeep with no hood on, with the engine in there. And it looks legit. Does mm-hmm. it not look legit?
It does.
Folks, if you're not on YouTube, you need to go to YouTube, Motor One Podcasts, or you need to go to motorone.com, look up our article, Jeep Gladiator two-door rendering is bad to the bone, because there'll be a link in there as well. I mean, this is a fictional vehicle. This does not exist. And yet, there it is with the hood on, and there it is with the hood off. There's another view front, you know, facing right down on top of the engine with the engine in the engine bay. And I mean, it just looks legit. And this view from the back, I mean, it has a very, very wide stance on it. It almost looks like a street truck, but it's got gobs of ground clearance. And this was one of the renderings that I really enjoyed writing about. Sometimes some of the renderings we get, it's just like, this just seems kind of off the wall, or this seems a little silly. And this thing was just cool with the wide tires, with all of the work that went into making this, not just from one angle, but from multiple angles, with the hood on, with the hood off, showing the engine. Some people complain about renderings. It's like the automotive world of fan fiction, but I don't care, because this just, the creativity, the artistry here, this is wonderful. And I hope automakers really pay attention to some of these, because I think they could learn a lesson or two myself.
He does really good work. And sorry, while you're talking here, I'm trying to find the one that I was thinking of that. Okay.
I mean, for a while, yeah, he was posting what if, you know, vintage ads, like what if Cadillac made an Escalade in the late 70s or early 80s.
It's funny and you mentioned that, because here is his 59 Cadillac Escalade. And I just thought that looked fantastic, to take the Suburban and yep. basically stretch it onto a Cadillac chassis. Like, obviously in the late 50s, no one would have wanted that. But now he did such a good job there. There's no yep. doubt. Like, that's a good one.
I would be happy covering those renderings all day long. They're not real. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's diving into the imagination. It's showing us things that could have been. It's showing us, in some cases, things that could be for future renderings, for possible vehicles. Hey, who knows? Maybe Jeep will remember they built that concept. They'll see the renderings of that bad to the bone Gladiator two-door, and they'll think, well, maybe we could do a special run for a little while. Probably won't happen, but
it won't happen. But the thing is, the thing that makes it tantalizing is that it could happen, because both the Gladiator and the Wrangler are both made in Toledo in the same factory plant. Like, it's the same shell over the entire building. So there's nothing, money is stopping them, but technically there doesn't seem to be much stopping them from taking a two-door Wrangler and putting a bed on it, because I know, I've been to the factory, I've walked around the factory, it's all right there under one roof. Like, you could do it.
Well, and they did do it with their concept, but
yeah.
The two-door short bed, that's not where the money is.
So. Nope. Okay. My turn for my second
one. Give us another one.
Yep. So, full disclosure here, I am not a camping person. I and our boss, if he's listening to this, I am not a tiny house person. Like, I, you know, I
yeah.
I lived in dorms or apartments for years and years and years after I moved out of my parents' home. I have a house now. I know for my generation, I'm lucky to be that way. I don't want to go back to a, you know, less than, in this case, less than like 600 square feet of living space. But I understand that there are people that do, and that there are people that enjoy that, and there are people that enjoy and want to go outdoors. And honestly, and this is a story that performed very, very well for us, Winnebago, they are coming out with the Hike 100 travel camper, or I don't know, I guess travel camper, that's what you call it.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, just a little camper.
It's a very tiny camper. It's a camper for two people, I think. As I recall, there is a version that you can fit three people in, but that takes a loft bed. So, you know, it takes three people. But it's a very tiny camper. And if I had to go camping for a weekend, this thing seems ideal to me. And I can kind of understand the popularity around it. I'm going to throw the pictures up here.
Well, I mean, these things, they're easy to tow. They're easy to set up. You don't need to find some big RV park. And you're right. This article was extremely popular for us for several days, if not even longer. And it seems like every time we write about a small camper, whether it's a trailer, whether it's like just a small van conversion, there's extreme popularity there. And I don't know if it's because people are just a little stir crazy with COVID. They're wanting to get out. They're wanting to get away from their homes. They're wanting to get away from the cities. But yeah, something small like this for just a little weekend getaway.
Right. So this thing,
I think the small space is awesome.
With nothing in it, weighs 2,700 pounds. I don't have a wet weight for it. So, but that means if you have a Ford Explorer, you can tow this thing easily. If you have a higher up Outback, maybe as far as when I researched the story, I could be wrong here, like the very, very highest version of the RAV4, if this thing's dry, you could do it. But Explorer easily, F-150,
you wouldn't even know it was behind an F-150.
Yeah, but weight of 2,700 pounds is nothing. Yep. And that's enough to sleep two people inside. It does have a heater. It has a what do they call it? I forget what they call the insulation. It's insulated, though. I can tell you that. I can't find it. Oh, a radiant foil insulation system in the roof. And it also has 2-inch thick insulated panels in the walls. So for a weekend, you know, for a Friday, Saturday, I'm going back Sunday, something like that. 31 gallons of fresh water, that's plenty. You can also carry 4.75 gallons of black water, which basically means sewage, because this thing does have a toilet and a small shower on board, and 25 gallons of gray water, which is kind of your shower, your sink, your water you wouldn't want to drink but is not polluted. Right. It can do all of that. So for a weekend away, you could take this thing. And so Winnebago has not announced the pricing for this, and I was just checking online. So they do, though, have a slightly larger version of the Hike that has kind of an extension on the rear. And that one they charge $29,605 for. We have to assume, since this one doesn't have that extension on the back, it's going to be less. I don't know. If I had to guess, I'd throw the number 25 out, just, you know, kind of as a guess. But yeah, if you were looking for a really tiny camping trailer, you and a spouse, maybe you, a spouse and a single child, this thing seems really cool and it seems perfect for that. And yeah, I dig it. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, so Thule, the company that makes all sorts of outdoor gear, it has their attachment points on it. So if you have a paddle board, a canoe, it can hook up to a bike carrier on the back. So if you're doing any sort of outdoor stuff, you can hook it up to this little trailer. And, you know, it seems kind of perfect. It seems perfect for a weekend away. This is not your overlanding week out in the wilderness type of deal. But if you're going away for a weekend, it seems really nice, and the price seems right. Like, you know, you're not camping outside on the ground. Like I said, I'm guessing 25 grand. that's not stupid expensive, especially once you factor in you're probably already going to use your tow vehicle for daily driving. So, you know, a couple weekends a year, that doesn't seem that bad to me.
That's the camper for the couple that's in college, used to love to go out like into some of the Forest Service areas.
That's exactly
really what it really is. Roughing it with a tent, who are now 20, maybe 25 years older and realize that sleeping on the ground hurts. And
or maybe they have a kid that, you know, maybe they have a 3-year-old that they don't want to sleep in a tent and they want to sleep in something like this. And
So you get that, you just get that small little camper that still gives you kind of that close feeling, but you don't have to pitch the tent. You don't have to worry if it starts to get really windy at night. Yeah, I'm like you, Bruce. I like having my space, but for a little camping adventure like that, I'm digging the small stuff. I just wrote an article today on a small trailer that's about – actually, I think it might even be a little bit smaller. But,
oh, okay.
But those having a full bathroom inside, that is such a big deal to people. So, yeah, bravo.
Cool. All right.
Bravo. Yeah, we're running a little late, so I'll just jump onto this one.
Okay. Yeah, 15 minutes.
I'll jump onto this one here really quick. Sticking with Jeep, actually. Okay. Well, I guess maybe not Jeep, but Mopar. We got a teaser this week for what's going to be going on with Mopar at the 2021 SEMA show. For now, as far as we know, the SEMA show is still on for Vegas, right at the beginning of November, November 2nd to November 5th, I think. Of course, if you're listening to this, you almost certainly know SEMA, the big aftermarket show. Mm-hmm. How many Jeeps do you see at SEMA, Bruce? I mean,
dozens.
Jeeps and muscle cars are everywhere at SEMA.
Yep.
So you really can't have SEMA without some sort of Jeep. So we got a teaser here. Mopar teases Jeep and Ram concept builds for 2021 SEMA show. Expect a tricked out Gladiator, Wrangler, and Ram 1500, among others. These are just teasers. I did a little rant a couple weeks back on teasers. This one isn't too bad though, because we know, this show is coming up very soon. Here's a little preview of what's going on. Let me jump into some of these photos.
I love that truck you're showing right there. Go ahead and talk about it, and I'm going to show you the picture of what it's based on. But I love that truck.
The teaser didn't offer any information, so we only have the photos to go on. The first photo here is an old school, just the front of an old school Gladiator, Jeep Gladiator. It looks like it's an army truck of some sorts. We can see some stenciling on a very, very no-nonsense, just rectangular front bumper. It's got spotlights on the fenders. Looks like there's another spotlight there on the roof. So
yeah, maybe.
Whether
I don't know.
I mean, whether it's a new Gladiator dressed up to look like an old, whether it's an old Gladiator that they've just bolted some cool parts to, hard to say. The next teaser is very, very dark, as most of these teasers often are.
Maybe like a camping Jeep of some kind.
Well, I mean, the interior looks like a Wrangler Unlimited.
Right, I agree.
You got the curved roll bar there on the side, but obviously it has some sort of raised roof on it because we're looking at windows forward and to the side. I think I theorize that this could be some kind of overlanding addition. Some sort of internal camping.
I agree with you. Yeah.
For a Rubicon. And when you're talking, I mean, we have to keep in mind, we're talking about Mopar. So the goal of this is going to be to sell Mopar accessories. So they'll create this cool looking overlanding Jeep that has maybe a few things out of the ordinary, but then it'll be fitted with, you know, like side steps and bumper guards and winches, things that you can buy from Mopar. So that's just something to keep in the back of your mind as we go through these teasers. This one is obviously it's a Ram pickup truck, and it also looks like it's going to be some sort of overlanding vehicle that's extremely popular right now. We can see there's some sort of bed rack going on there. It's sitting next to a tent. I theorize that maybe this could be some sort of TRX, but looking at it now, I don't think
maybe a Rebel. Maybe.
I don't think the fenders are really wide enough to go TRX. I think somebody commented that maybe it was hinting at some sort of electrified version.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that either. They were citing the combination, you know, with the blue colors here. Mm-hmm. But in any case, it's going to be some sort of tricked up Ram 1500. This one, I think, is a TRX.
I agree.
When you look at the flared front end there, we don't get any sort of overland vibe from this one. This is probably just going to be let's see how high we can jump over this sand dune thing, which, by the way, if you have a TRX or a Raptor or any pickup truck, don't jump off of sand dunes. Another public service announcement from your fine folks here at Rambling About Cars. You don't want to be a YouTube star for the wrong reasons. So whatever's going on here, hey, we see it flying through sand, probably going to be maybe some Baja edition, some sort of lift with big tires, wheels that you can buy through Mopar.
Yeah.
I think the last one, I caught a comment on this just earlier today. This is obviously a Rubicon. But the commenter said, well, if you look, you can see that the side mirror is folded forward and there's a little E on the side mirror. So we're looking at a four by
better eyes than me.
We're looking at a four by E.
Yeah. Right.
We're looking at some sort of four by E. So it's going to be the hybrid, probably with some, I mean, obviously we can see it has some auxiliary lighting on it.
Those are available now. Cause I wrote up a story about those lights.
Yep. So, probably a lift. It's hard to say. This is a teaser that really doesn't give us any other hints other than, okay,
well, Mopar's going to be there. The Aurora Borealis. So maybe it's some sort, maybe it's like the Rubicon Arctic, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. You know? It'll be something with the hybrid.
Yeah.
So thanks for pointing that. I missed that when I wrote the article.
I can't see it now.
When you look really close, you'd have to brighten it up, I think. But when you look really close, you can see there's a little E on the back side of that mirror. So, good job getting that little hint. It was nice to see. It was nice to see Mopar coming out with these teasers here, letting us know that. Okay,
leave that first picture up there just 1 second, just because. Okay.
We're going to go back
love with this thing. And
we're going to go back to the old school Gladiator here. So,
yeah. So I am. You can pretty clearly look at that image and the image I'm about to throw up here. Let me find my share button. That you can see what the inspiration is for what they're showing off. So this is the Kaiser Jeep M715. It's clearly, you can even see kind of from the extended roof and stuff like that, that this is what they're evoking. You know, with Mopar, they're probably going to offer some of these parts to the customer. You know, they have a tendency of kind of building these fantasy vehicles that you can't get a lot of the stuff, but some of the parts are going to be available. You know, maybe that cool brush car is going to be available. Maybe, you know, the roof thing is going to be available, stuff like that. But it's just kind of cool. And it's always cool to see them going back, digging through the archives and doing what they can do. And I just thought that was cool as hell.
No, absolutely. I agree with you there totally. Those were some of my interesting picks from the last week or so. Listeners, if you like this segment, if you want to see me and Bruce talk more about some of the things that we write about that maybe you missed, let us know. Email us podcast@motorone.com. You can also catch me on Twitter at @CHWriting. Bruce, you are on Twitter at...
Chris Bruce 1985.
There we go. Yeah. I don't really have anything else to add at this point. I think it's time to wrap this puppy up.
I think it is. So good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We always appreciate every comment that you send. Obviously, this episode, we didn't read any comments. We only received a few, and we kind of had some other stuff to talk about, so we didn't do comments, but it doesn't mean that we don't ever read comments. And I hope if you ever look at any past episodes, you see we read them all the time.
All the time.
Yeah. But yeah, we appreciate everyone who listens, everyone who comments, everyone who reads the stories. You will find the stories at generally between 10 and 10:30 a.m. at Eastern at motorone.com. They go up at generally 9:30 Eastern on both all of your audio services and on Facebook. So if you're looking for any YouTube. Of us,
YouTube.
I misspoke. Yep.
YouTube.
Right.
Although I'm glad you mentioned that, Bruce. Well done, because we are now posting just the videos every Sunday on Facebook. So
you've been doing that.
If you happen to if you can't go to YouTube, you can get just the videos on Facebook. They go up on motorone.com. They post at various times, but you'll catch them on Sundays.
Yep. Smith, you're totally right. Our stuff will be up on Facebook, like Smith said, and on YouTube on generally around 9:30 a.m. on Friday. So
we dish this out to anybody who will take it.
Man. Yeah, we like. Yeah.
We have no shame.
Exactly. But yeah, so we appreciate everything. We appreciate all the comments, all the listens, all the everything, like I said. So bye-bye, and we appreciate you, and thank you for listening. So have a good day.
See you, everybody.
Bye-bye.